Papau yasyakstanam harihi.
Papau yasyakstanam
Shri Rajo Vacha, Nanda Kim Akarod Brahma, Shreya Eva Mahodaya, Yashoda Cha Mahabhaga, Papau Yasya Stanam Hari.
Sri Raja Uvacha.
Maharaj Parikshit further inquired from Shukadeva Goswami. Maharaja Nanda. Kim. What? Akarot.
Performed.
Brahman. O learned Brahmana.
Auspicious activities.
Like performing penances and austerities.
Evam.
As exhibited by him.
Mahaudayam.
From which they achieved the greatest perfection.
Yashoda.
Mother Yashoda. Cha, also,
Mahabhaga,
most fortunate, Papao,
drank.
Yasya, of whom, Stanam,
the breast milk,
Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection? An ecstatic love. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chatur Vida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukriti Narjuna. Without Sukriti, or pious activities, no one can come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is approached by four kinds of pious men. Arto Jigasur Artarti Gyani Cha. But here we see that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda surpassed all of them. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, what kind of pious activities did they perform in their past lives by which they achieved such a stage of perfection? Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda are accepted as the father and mother of Krishna. Yet Mother Yashoda was more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, because Nanda Maharaj was sometimes separated from Krishna, whereas Mother Yashoda, Krishna's mother, was not separated from Krishna at any moment. From Krishna's babyhood to his childhood, and from his childhood to his youth, Mother Yashoda was always in association with Krishna. Even when Krishna was grown up, he would go to Vrindavana and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. Therefore, there is no comparison to the fortune of Mother Yashoda. And Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, Yashoda cha Mahabhaga. These words can be understood on different levels by, according to the realization of the person who's hearing. Good fortune, this Mahabhaga, this can be understood differently. A tourist going to Las Vegas is praying to Lady Luck for good fortune to win on the roulette wheel or to pick the right, team for the football, game. This is an idea of good fortune. Or there is the mundane karmakanda conception of punya, that I will do rituals, I will give charity, I will do various things. Yakshe dasyami modisha. Iti agana vimohita. This is bewilderment of maya. Thinking in terms of mundane piety. And then there's transcendental good fortune. We have to presume that in the case of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, we're not talking about ordinary piety or ordinary Shreya. Shreya means ultimate benefit, but here it's being understood as auspicious activities, like performing penances and austerities. But again, it would not be appropriate to think that Nanda and Yashoda became who they are, that they were previously materialists, and they, by performing some ordinary pious activities, they became elevated. They're eternal associates of the Lord. They may have performed austerities, but that's part of their lila. And also, here's Parikshit Maharaj asking the question. He's not in ignorance. He doesn't need to ask these questions. He wants to encourage Shukadev to speak more. And he wants to evoke from him the nectarian topics of Krishna that he wants to hear, but also for the benefit of conditioned souls. He wants to have Shukadev Goswami explain things philosophically. Not that he himself is confused, but for the benefit of others who are confused. He's asking these questions. So also, we shouldn't think that Parikshit is thinking on the lower level, that, oh, Nanda and Yashoda must have performed some ordinary punya. No, he's not confused to think like that, but he's anticipating that some people may think that you become, that Nanda and Yashoda became what they were by the same kind of punya that ordinary people do. So he's asking the question like that. Anyway, if there's something wrong in the question, it will be corrected in the answer. We expect that Shukadev Goswami is going to explain appropriately, correctly, just what kind of auspicious activities Nanda and Yashoda did in their past lives. Shreya, auspicious activity for ultimate benefit. Anyway, we have been taught, Prabhupada always made it very clear, that the only real activities that will lead to the success of our life are activities of Krishna consciousness. Thus, in his presentation of Bhagavad Gita as it is, he didn't even follow the traditional analysis given by our own acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti and Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in explaining the gradual elevation through different phases of yoga, the yoga ladder. But he emphasized on every chapter, almost every verse, the essence of simply fully surrendering to Krishna and becoming his devotee in the practice of pure devotional service. This is Shreya. This is Prabhupada's special emphasis, that for us, there's nothing auspicious if we don't practice Krishna consciousness. There's no middle ground that we can just be pious, you know, worship God in our own way, following the dictates of our heart, and doing some good work, and being a good citizen. Not in the modern situation, and not people like us. Because of our association with the bad influence of Kali Yuga and the other people in Kali Yuga, we're disqualified from doing any ordinary pious activity. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it in general. E Kali Kali Nahi Kon Dharma. Vaishnava, Vaishnava, Shastra, Ekori, Manama. In this Kali Yuga, There is no dharma. There is no religious life in Kali Yuga. That's a very strong statement. Ekohi Marma, there's only a few things that are of any essential value in the line of religious life. And that is Vaishnava and Vaishnava Shastra. The association of Krishna's pure devotees and the Vaishnava Shastra, which for us means the Gita and the Bhagavatam. There's only a few other books that really teach anything about Shuddha Bhakti. And the two books that teach it completely and throughout, not just part of the Padma Purana, part of the Skanda Purana, talk about pure devotion, but the whole Gita and the whole Bhagavatam teach about nothing else. This is our only shelter. We want a progressive life. We want Shreyas. We want to do whatever will perfect our lives. We don't have any alternative. Nanda and Yashoda, on the other hand, they're eternally perfect. They didn't actually have to perform Sukriti. Chaturvida bhajante maam. Jana Sukriti nor Arjuna. Here Sukriti is an adjective. Those who do good. So we can say that if someone is showing that he's advanced in devotional service, he must have also been practicing in his previous life. But every soul who has lived in ignorance has a beginning of his devotional practice. There was a life that was the first life in which we did devotional service, even if we've done for several lives. And for some people, they're coming to us and just beginning now for the first time in all their lives in this world to finally begin devotional service. So that's described, the neophytes, the beginners, are described by Krishna in that Gita, verse 7:16. Chatur vidha bhajante mam. Four kinds of people begin to worship me. Jana sukritinor, Arjuna. And there has to be something special about them. A few people begin devotional service. We can say some people start devotional service in a particular lifetime, and the reason is that they did it in previous life, and they're just continuing. They have ruchi, they have a taste for it, and they naturally gravitate toward it because of their previous engagement in a previous life. But how is it that someone is so fortunate that he can begin the process when he didn't do it before in any previous life? It says, Sukriti. There is the usefulness of mundane, worldly, pious activities. Those activities which help the cultivation of jnana and vairagya will make a person more likely to take the opportunity to enter devotional service. The opportunities come unasked, undeserved. Krishna sends his devotees, and the devotees try to encourage the conditioned souls to hear and chant about Krishna, to do service to Krishna, and to revive the understanding that they're Krishna's servants. No one deserves that. No one deserves. Krishna himself doesn't interfere. He doesn't interfere with our independence, because love cannot be forced. So Krishna doesn't want to meddle and make us surrender. But he does send his devotees who do encourage us or even nag us to please surrender to Krishna. So in that way, Krishna is interfering. But why does one person take advantage of that causeless opportunity, undeserved opportunity? But why does one person out of many take advantage of it and everybody else doesn't? Everyone else ignores or refuses that opportunity. The devotees come and not everybody listens. Only a few people listen. Why? Why those few people? Because they're Sukriti. They've done something to purify themselves. They have some traces, at least, of jnana and vairagya. their intelligence has been purified, and their hearts have been purified. They're not too much materially attached. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said there's two kinds of people who can't be Krishna's devotees. The Mayavadi and the person who's just too much addicted to sense gratification. This is lack of Sukriti. By Sukriti, your mind and your heart become purified. Philosophical misunderstandings are cleared out by the cultivation of knowledge. And greed, envy, and lust are cleared out by the purification of the heart, by development of a sense of detachment from material pleasures. A person who has some and enough, a minimal dose, or what do we call, when we're talking about nuclear reactions, there's a, you have to put together enough of the fissionable material,
critical mass of
Sukriti. There has to be a certain amount accumulated, and then it's effective. Then the chain reaction begins. And when the devotees come, the person can reciprocate and accept, because he's developed enough. Maybe it's not a lot, but there's a certain amount you have to have of ability to understand philosophically, an actual human intelligence, and ability to put aside material pleasures, to give up your addictions. Then you can listen to and follow the devotees. But if you're full of bad ideas, especially the idea that everybody is God, and similar bad ideas, and if you're tied down by heavy material desires, you cannot follow, you cannot hear the devotees, and you can't follow them. And then you can't begin your devotional service. So it's a very fortunate person, Sukriti, who's become human enough, civilized enough, that he can take advantage of the association of Krishna's devotees. We're being offered here a very advanced stage of devotional service by hearing about the perfect devotion of Krishna's best devotees. We can learn, we can become attracted to follow in their footsteps. I don't take it to mean that I'm advertising that everyone should become a sadhya. This is a process that we gradually become attracted by hearing. Not that we imitate, but we become attracted to the kind of pure devotional service that such devotees as Nanda and Yashoda performed. Even if we think, well, you know, I know that my guru or somebody told me, or I'm just presuming I'm not going to be in Vatsalya rasa, so why should I pay attention to this? It's not my rasa. But whatever your rasa is, your rasa may be the next one above. Maybe you're in Madhurya rasa. Well, then you have to acquire the qualities that are found in Vatsalya also before you can realize your potential. And maybe you're in a lower rasa. Still, you can appreciate. You may not ever be able to become in a parental relationship with Krishna. Your relationship may be simple servitude. Still, the servants are all appreciating and meditating on the wonderful service that's done by the greater devotees, even if you can't do it yourself. This is what we call vicarious, you're enjoying the accomplishments of someone else. You're watching a performance on a stage. Great hero, conquering kingdoms. You can't do that. You can't even get your own wife and children under control. Yeah, but you're very pleased watching the great king conquering kingdoms on the stage or on the movie screen. This is vicarious gratification. But we have that too in devotional service, where we appreciate the devotion of those who we can never emulate, who are greater than we can ever be. Still, it's a source of transcendental pleasure and transcendental enlightenment. It advances our devotional service to appreciate the service of others, even if it's not a service that we can do.
It's not like material life, where you have to position yourself by dragging other people down, either actually or mentally. The people attain a high position by pushing other people out of the way. It's not like that in devotional service. The more you think yourself inferior, the more you're elevated. The more you glorify the others, the more you become glorified. Not like material life. So, just like in the Sri Sampradaya, the Alwars, they're Vaikuntha devotees, so they're basically they don't talk about rasas, because they're all basically in Dasya rasa. So they don't really recognize distinctions of rasas. As far as they're concerned, everybody is a kinkara, a servant. That's their viewpoint. So they don't even have an analysis of various rasas. But they appreciate. You read the poetry of the Alwars, collections of poems. On one page, the poet is worshipping the Lord in the mood of Hanuman. Turn the page, on the next page, he's in the mood of a gopi. The same poet, from one page to the next. So it seems to us like rasa-basa, jumping from one rasa to the other. But for vicarious, or for appreciative, rather than when you're just appreciating someone else's rasa, rather than being in that rasa yourself, this is allowed. You know, it is appropriate for Vaikuntha devotees to be appreciating all the devotion performed by various kinds of devotees. Is fine. So, at least we should be appreciating the devotion of Nanda and Yashoda. That we should learn how they have worked hard to achieve their relationship with Krishna. Maybe it's not material work that they did, but transcendental activities are also hard work. A kind of tapas. You know, it's not material tapas. Not material austerities. But to exclusively focus yourself, to try in everything just to please Krishna, that is a great act of concentration and effort. One has to always, as a practicing devotee, try not to be selfish. Try not to be distracted by material attractions and material repulsions. This is hard work. Even when you've achieved a high position, you're past the stage of nishta, you're developing your ecstasies and your attractions, still you have to work hard. In a sense, still there's lots of hard work to do. You have to become perfectly qualified to enter into Krishna's intimate service. That requires constant endeavor and discipline. It's not that on the higher levels of devotional service everything is chaotic or anarchistic. It's not. There are principles that must be followed. The prime principle is dainyam, utter humility. A devotee who doesn't have that cannot enter into the realm of Goloka. This was explained by Narada Muni to Gopakumara. Narada was there present in Vaikuntha when Gopakumara was staying there. And Gopakumara, again, he has this recurring problem that even though he attains the Supreme Lord's association in a certain realm, he's never satisfied. Because he's actually attracted to the original form of Godhead, Bal Gopal, Madan Gopal, is his actual Ishtadeva. And no matter where he goes, no matter what form of the Lord he gets the association of, he's never fully satisfied. He stayed in Puri for many years or some time and worshipped Lord Jagannath, but ultimately he was not satisfied with that. He went to Vaikuntha and became a personal associate of Lord Narayan. Still, in the end, he wasn't satisfied. So here he is in Vaikuntha, you know, with a sad look on his face. Narada comes up to him, "What is this? Nobody pouts in Vaikuntha. What's the matter with you?" Narada Muni is his Shiksha Guru, so he can talk like this. And Gopakumar really didn't understand what the problem is, why he's unhappy in Vaikuntha, why he's worried in Vaikuntha. But Narada understood that he's meant for something higher, but he doesn't have any knowledge of it. So Narada Muni informed him about this other place beyond Vaikuntha that nobody here in Vaikuntha will tell you about. They either don't know about it or they don't like to talk about it. And that's Goloka, the highest realm of the Lord. So it's not just enough to disturb his mind telling him there's a better place. It's only kind to tell him how to go to this place. You know, there's a better place, but there's no way to get there. Or you're not going to be allowed to go there. What's the sense of telling him then? So Narada told him what you have to do to transfer yourself to Goloka. And he said you have to acquire one special quality, and that's called dainyam. Even if you're in Vaikuntha, you must further acquire this additional quality to go beyond Vaikuntha. Utter humility. Because dina means low, degraded. But it doesn't mean to actually become degraded. It means to think yourself lower than the lowest. And to have no trace of pride. No tinge of selfishness. Complete selflessness. That is what's possessed by the residents of Goloka. And here are two of the real original residents of Goloka, two of the most prominent ones, Nanda and Yashoda. They've come down to this earth along with Krishna. When we were told that their incarnations of Vasu, what's his name, Drona and Dada, his wife, but those are just the expansions of the original Nanda and Yashoda. Expansions. They expand into Vaikuntha, they have their Vaikuntha forms and they have their Swargaloka forms within the earth. Their own expansions. And those expansions, Drona and Dada, joined within the body of Nanda and Yashoda when they appeared on the earth. But Nanda and Yashoda are the original eternal devotees from Goloka. And they've come down to this earth to participate in Krishna's childhood pastimes. They have this quality of complete selflessness, utter humility. This is what makes them different. This is what Parikshit is actually asking about. What's special about Nanda and Yashoda? What did they do in the past? And what is it about them that makes them so exceptional? He's not asking what ordinary punya did they do. But what is it that distinguishes these special devotees of Vrajabhumi? What makes them better devotees than even the residents of Vaikuntha? And we'll read in the next verses, one more verse in the question, and then Shukadeva Goswami is going to tell the history of Drona, but you'll see in that history what qualities these two devotees, Drona and Dada, what personal qualities they had that made Krishna appear as their son. And even, although he also appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, he gave them association that he didn't give to Vasudeva and Devaki. So we'll read in the verses of giving the answers of Shukadeva what it was that Nanda and Yashoda did that was special. So, any questions? Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned that the additional qualification for attaining Goloka Vrindavan is dainya.
Yes.
Which is utter humility and despair and some.
Yeah, so you can say despair.
So, like, I've read some songs of Alvar's, even the dainya is shown, like, on the same level. So, like, what?
No, it's not on the same level. The whatever dainyam you can see in Goloka in Vaikuntha is on a lower level.
What element is present there? Which
it's a matter of degree. It's a matter of absolute purity and degree. Mm-hmm. There's some because of the Aishwarya Jnana, there's something missing. If a devotee has prominent attitude of being attracted to the opulence of the Lord, that means he hasn't attained that full qualification of the Goloka devotees. They're not on an equal level. Okay?
Their dhyana is not on an equal level.
Yeah, yeah. Their qualification, they're not as qualified as the Goloka devotees. Otherwise, they'd be at Goloka.
And as you mentioned about the
Vicarious.
How do you spell it?
V-I-C-A-R. A vicar is a representative. The vicar of Christ is the Pope. That means the Christ is gone, but the Pope is standing in his place. Substitute. So vicarious means substitute as an adjective. Standing as a substitute. You're not actually Nanda Maharaj, but you can relish. Yeah, Prabhupada liked to use the word relish instead of enjoy. You know, it's not like you don't just swallow it whole, but you're just licking the relish. Yeah. That means, you're not actually in the relationship, but you're appreciating it from a distance. You're somebody else, but you can appreciate the real person's relationship with Krishna, even though you don't have exactly that relationship yourself. Anything else?
It seems that from the answer to the question that Shukdev Goswami is, how shall I say, fortifying this conception that Mother Yashoda and Maharaj had actually done some sort of punya in the past life. They were vasus and they worshipped with great austerities.
Yeah.
Why didn't he just immediately say directly that they're eternally...
Because this knowledge is confidential and it can't be just cheaply revealed to anybody and everybody. You got to be fit to understand the answer. And for those who are not fit, they get the external shell of the answer. They go away thinking that, okay, they were demigods and they did some punya and that's how they became Nanda and Yashoda. You know, someone who's not fit to understand the real answer will get the external shell of the answer.
Another possible reason is that for those whose adhikar is on that level, he has to emphasize the importance of punya, as you were explaining.
For the demigods, this is preaching for the demigods. You know, be a good demigod. He's not going to discourage them. That's useless to be a demigod, and the demigods are all sitting there, well, what are we doing then? Yeah. What's the use of our service to Krishna? We're just demigods. We might as well all quit. So you don't want to discourage the demigods either. Yes?
We heard some statements that devotional service is full bliss. Kevalananda Kanda, Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam.
Yes.
And by the other hand, we have to cry for Krishna and be completely... willing to go there and cry for Krishna.
Yes.
So how to reconcile these two things? What is the real meaning of
this? Well, we're thinking that if you're crying, you must be miserable. But an advanced devotee is crying, he's lamenting, but that lamenting is not miserable. It's blissful lamenting. We don't understand it. That's a mystery. But that lamenting is the highest bliss. The gopis lamenting after Krishna disappeared in the middle of the rasa dance is not the same lamentation of ordinary women who get whose boyfriends run away. It's not the mundane thing. It's not miserable. So yeah, we have to cry for Krishna, but it doesn't mean we have to be miserable. Yeah.
Did he explain that no one can become the Nanda and Yashoda? Then the third position is very high.
Yes.
But when the Drona and Dhara, the detached lady, they are not the really Nanda and Yashoda.
They are. Drona and Dhara are expansions of Nanda and Yashoda. They took birth in Swarga Loka as expansions of Nanda and Yashoda. They didn't have to become Nanda and Yashoda. They were born as Nanda and Yashoda, at least their expansions. So it's not that they became Nanda and Yashoda. They were already. Yes. Eternal associates. Plus their expansions.
If you have some jiva, they will develop such type of love for Krishna, then how they will act with Krishna?
Then they can have, they want a Vatsalya Rasa, they can have it in some other relationship. You can become the lady down the street who plays with Krishna, the baby Krishna. You can have a motherly relationship, but you can't literally become his mother. Well, if it's Vatsalya Rasa, it's not. I mean, they may have the same Stayi Bhava, but they won't take the same actual position. I mean, there's room for any number of devotees. It's not that there's a limited number of positions, and therefore we have to have an election. You know, someone loses and someone wins. No, everyone can win. You know, there's a position can be found for everybody in whatever rasa you want. That's not a problem. That, you know, because Nanda and Yashoda are there, unless I kick them out, I can't become, you know. No, you don't have to kick them out or kick anybody out. Krishna will make you a position. You know, he can make another avatar, and you know, you can be his father or mother.
He will become the maidservant of...
Maidservant or friend, or some other avatar, some other expansion, you can become the parent. Something will be arranged, no problem. Yeah, there are so many devotees in Raja. Raja is a big place. Even now, the population is 1 million. So suppose there were 1 million people there 5,000 years ago. In his Prakata Lila, Krishna is not in all the places. He's in one place. And all the other places, they only hear about Krishna. But still, they have their relationships. There are so many elderly gopis, and they're all in motherly relationship with Krishna. They may only hear about Krishna or see him once in a while or see someone that knows him, but they're enjoying that relationship even from a distance. The rasa is what matters. It doesn't matter that, you know, you have literally the relationship. You know, that Krishna is actually living in your house. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you can experience the rasa. That's the real spiritual life. It's not the external trappings. The taste. Yes. What you actually experience. What you experience, the real experience is the rasa. And also in Goloka, in the realm of Vrindavan, most relationship, most the love is based mostly not on relationship, but on the desire. It's, what do you call it? Sambandha mayi and kama. Okay. In other realms like Dwarka and Vaikuntha, the relationship is prominent. But in Goloka, the relationship is less important, and more important is the ecstasy. So whether you literally are a father or not doesn't matter, but you have the fatherly love. And that's a rare thing. That's the rarest thing. Everybody's a father. Everybody has a father, and many men are fathers. That's not that rare. But what's rare is to have love, actual love. Relationship is, the dogs have, you know, dog has children also. So the relationship father-son, that means nothing. It's a no value. But the value is the loving sentiment. So even without literally being Krishna's father, you can have that Vatsalya Rasa. If you're not satisfied with that, then you're looking for the wrong thing. If you don't want Rasa, you want something else, then you're misguided.
Then how one will develop this Rasa if it is eternal with
Jiva? That's the whole science of devotional service, how to develop Rasa. Read Nectar of Devotion. Yeah. You have to go through the stages. Practice devotional service, accept a spiritual master, perform the activities of devotional service, purify your heart, get free of all the anartas, then you could gradually develop rasa. Okay. You had something?
Without Krishna's special mercy,
yes.
Yes. Not possible.
Even more than that. Do you have to have the mercy of the devotees who have that dainyam? It's by serving those devotees. You have to serve and follow in the footsteps of the devotees who have the qualification. And they will ask Krishna to give you the qualification. But you have to get it from someone who has it. You know, you shouldn't go directly to Krishna for it. You have to go to the devotees who have that special connection with Krishna. And then they can ask Krishna to let you join also. This is service. That's the principle of Raghunuga Bhakti. You follow the devotees who have a certain connection with Krishna, and then you can be allowed to develop it also. Okay? Yes?
You were mentioning the Alwars, the overall mood of their poetry is appreciation for Kaikarium so much that even though they are discussing Vatsalya, they're discussing Madhurya and other rasas, their essential appreciation is for the Kaikarium.
Because that's what they know.
So how do we discriminate then between what is really rasabhas and what is just this kind of vicarious appreciation that you're mentioning?
Well, there's rules for kavya rasa also. You know, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. Similar to the rules that are there for the straight bhakti rasa. You know, certain things can mix and certain things don't mix well. But for the Vaikuntha devotee to appreciate Hanuman and to appreciate the gopis, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know what would be inappropriate. I don't know the rules.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is that, for example, in Padyabhi Rupa Goswami, the general principle that he gives in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is that, for example, Vatsalya and Madhurya are not compatible. But in the Padyabhi, he cites several verses in which they do appear to be mixed.
Well, I don't know how that works. If you keep them separate, then you can be eclectic. In your vicarious enjoyment, you can appreciate for some time one rasa and then switch to another rasa. It's just you shouldn't have them both at the same time, in the same scene. But if you're in dasya rasa, you can appreciate both rasas that are incompatible if you put them together, but you can appreciate one and then turn to the other. That's what you see in the Alwar poetry. Not that in the same poem, you've got Hanuman and a gopi in the same poem. So the compatibility is done by keeping everything departmentalized, not by, there is no mixing. Things are kept simple.
As I remember, after describing all this Maitri Varisthiti, after in Nectar Devotion, is the favorable and unfavorable combinations. Rupa Goswami also gives the five conditions in which apparently opposite mellows match.
And yeah, there's exceptions.
And these are mostly in poetic combinations. They're not actual combinations.
Yes, yes.
They're mostly poetic. And there are some conditions he gives for each of the five types of such situations.
Yes. Rupa Goswami is an expert in poetry, so he knows these things. Yes. And it's a general principle that the mixture shouldn't ruin the sense of amazement. It should, if the chakmatkar is disturbed, then there's something wrong in the mixture.
It's very subtle.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yes, Bruce.
Parikshit Maharaj and Shukdev Goswami, sorry, when he comes out of the womb, he walks into the forest straight, Prabhu.
Yes.
When Vyasadeva goes behind him and begs, come back. And then he divides himself and one walks out and that is the one who goes and says the story. And
that story, that part comes from the Devi Bhagavad. It may be somewhere else in some other Purana, but that's not our version. Of Shukadev, of two Shukadevs manifesting. That's probably a different Shukadev. It's not the same.
It's not authorized by Prabhupada.
It's not authorized by Bhagavatam. Wow. It's coming from a Tamasic Purana, Devi Bhagavat Purana, which talks about Shukadev being a Grihastha.
Yeah.
And he spoke to Bhagavatam, but a different Bhagavatam. He spoke to Devi Bhagavatam. So. Yeah, not only is it a different Shukadev, he ends up speaking a whole different Purana that glorifies Durga. 12 cantos are there. It's called Bhagavatam, but it's not the same Bhagavatam. So that's not the same Shukadev. It's a whole different, it's some other day of Brahma, it's a different story, and it's described in a different Purana. So we shouldn't mix them up. You know, it's not, our Shukadev is only one of them, and he never got married. Yes, Prabhu?
I'm just wondering, because there is one verse in the 8th canto where it talks about the daughter of Sukadev, and Srila Prabhupada explains this expansion of Sukadev.
Yeah.
From Brahma Vaivarta there in the Prabhupada.
Brahma Vaivarta, okay.
There seems to be some authenticity to some of the things.
Okay, but that's a different person, at least.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, I mean, you know, then there's two Shukadevs.
Yeah.
They're not the same person.
Well, I think the story when the he did expand and go back to the ashram of yesterday.
In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Described it, that's what you're saying.
And Prabhupada quotes it.
It's included in that edition we have. By Purna Pragya, Bhagavad. He includes the detail.
Okay, but where'd he get it? He probably dug it out of the Brahma Vaivarta Purana.
Well, I can find it.
Yeah. Okay, Prabhupada cites it, but he doesn't say it's, you know, he cites it as fact, okay. I'm sorry, yeah.
Just one question. This Devi Bhagavat, I think that our Acharya didn't accept another for authors, Puranas, or is it?
It's not that it's a bogus book. The controversy over is which is the Bhagavatam that's glorified all over the place. You know, there's glorification of the Bhagavatam. There's other Puranas praising the Bhagavatam. So there's a controversy over which Bhagavatam do we mean? The Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Devi Bhagavat? You know, that's the controversy. We're not saying Devi Bhagavat is bogus. We're saying it's only a minor Purana, Upa Purana. Mm-hmm. And the Maha Purana Bhagavat is the one we have in front of us. So what adds to the confusion is both of them are 12 cantos long and both of them are spoken by somebody called Shukadev. But the contents are quite different. And when you read the descriptions of the contents of the 10th, because Jiva Goswami points out that it said in the Matsya Purana that the Bhagavatam describes the killing of Vritrasura and the No, well, I don't think that's mentioned. The vidya, the mystic meditation taught by the horse-headed form. But this is actually taught by, not the Dichi, who was it, who taught Vishwarupa. He learned from, not from Lord Hariguru, but some sage who had a horse's head. From Ashwini Kumar. So anyway, no, it was, I'm sorry. Dadichi learned something from the Ashwini Kumaras. Anyway, this is a minor point that Dadichi learned from the Ashwini Kumaras and that Indra killed Vritra. But both of them are described in this Bhagavatam and not in the Devi Bhagavat. So therefore, the Bhagavatam that's glorified by the Matsya Purana has to be this one. This is the argument given by Baladeva Vidyabhushan, actually by Jiva Goswami also. The controversy over is not whether one or the other is bona fide, but which one is the big, you know, the Mahapurana Bhagavatam? Okay, anybody over here? There was a hand here, I don't know. So it was. You had one?
No, okay. My hand was like this.
So. Okay, I guess that's it then?
Yeah, actually, I had my hand up, but I was going to mention the same thing as Matsyavatar.
Okay. Then anything else? Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.